Next station, your calendar is 98-1, Marie Specs for BP America. Mr. Jaffe.
Before we get to the merits, it seems we're confronted with a procedural issue about whether or not that the issue that you raised today, which is an interesting issue, is really properly before us, in that the appeal is only from a judgment of the Court of Appeals that went to whether or not certain attachments were made to the CA4. That the issue's been waived in terms of the whole Clemente issue.
I don't think it's been waived. The argument in the Court of Appeals was whether the claim was timely filed, properly filed, under the requirements of 184. For our purposes here today, I'm not going to tell you that the attachment was on the motion that was filed 126-87.
Yes.
But the issues that are presented are two issues. And those two issues essentially are, what does 0.84 and 0.52 require? And I'm going to discuss that.
Was that the issue with the Court of Appeals? Because it seems the judgment of the Court of Appeals from which you appeal is merely addressing the limited issue, albeit the first appeal maybe had it, but does this appeal have within it the issue you wish to discuss?
I think so. Okay. The assignment of error set out, I think, at page, I'm sure probably the second page of the Court of Appeals opinion, is an assignment of error that I believe raises this issue, in addition to that. So that we're clear, what you have involved is a statute of limitations defense. And I would refer you to the case, the lawyer's cooperative case, which involved a statute of limitations argument. And the court in that case says, we have a statute of limitations argument here. We're going to consider all aspects of the statute of limitation argument, despite the fact that the defendant in that case decided, I think at the Supreme Court level, to raise a new statutory section as, in effect, helping them on statute of limitations, a section that has never been raised before under the Uniform Commercial Code. So what I say to you here is, we're here. There's a statute of limitation defense. They made the statute of limitation defense. I'm explaining to you why it's wrong and why this is time to file. And I'd like to get now to the issue of what happened with Clemente. Because Clemente, in the Lewis decision, was recognized as having established statutory requirements that were in the statute, as having conflicted with statutory requirements that were in the statute. And I'd like to suggest that Clemente probably did a few other things which unfortunately were not recognized at the time. First of all, 184A deals specifically with body parts. It is our position that a psychiatric condition is not a body part. It is our position that 84A does not apply to this case. So that the first question you have is, if 84A deals with body parts, how does the psychiatric claim fit into that? And we answer that by saying it fits in under 84C. Why does it fit in under 84C? It fits in because 84C is the residual section A4C specifically provides that there is recognition of a condition which was not claimed under A. Providing that condition is due to, the result of, or residual to a part that was claimed in A. Now, this spec claims an injury to her back in A, and there's no argument about that. And we say to you that this is one way of looking at it, an A4C residual situation, because in fact it has grown out of the condition that is allowed in the claim, the back injury. So first of all, Clementi is wrong in not recognizing that we're now dealing with body parts rather than, as it was before, children with claims. Secondly, Clementi was wrong because it didn't recognize that 84C applied, and 84C does not require notice within 2 years, so long as you're talking about a condition that is different than the one under A, but that is due to the one under A. Third, Clementi is wrong because, in practice, an understandable confusion, there's confusion on what is an additional condition. And I would say to you, additional conditions come in three sizes. First, the additional condition of kibble, which kibble was two separate injuries on the same day. And in kibble, the Supreme Court decided that the second injury, which had not been diagnosed within 2 years, could be recognized under point 52, continuing jurisdiction of the Industrial Commission. So one time is one kind of additional condition is two injuries on the same day. Then there is the additional condition referred to in dent. Dent is the additional condition which grows out of a body part which has been allowed, which is recognized. In dent, you had a knee contusion and chondromalacia developed, and chondromalacia was allowed under, I believe, 84C and point 52. And the third additional condition is what we have in this situation, a condition which is a residual condition coming from a body part for which claim has been made, but which is not within that body part number, which is not within A1. And therefore, I suggest to you that one way this case should be handled is to recognize that psychiatric is not a body part, that 84C applies, that the back is properly raised, and this is the residual from the back. That's the claim. And all 84C does, if you will, is to total the statute of limitations. This is not a recognition of the psychiatric. If we win on this case, she's got to go back. She's got to convince them that she had a psychiatric condition and that it grew out of the injury. All we're talking about is totaling the statute. The other way to look at this problem on the statute of limitations is to recognize that 84 deals with body parts, that point 52 deals with continuing jurisdiction, and that what these two statutes really do is to provide a step process. Step one, under 84A, there must be a filing indicating a body part. Assuming that body part is allowed, there is then continuing jurisdiction under point 52 for the Industrial Commission to consider other conditions. And so we may say here that we don't even need to look at 84C. We can look at 52. And 52 by itself picks up 84 so long as a claim for a body part was made, recognizes that having been made, there is continued jurisdiction to consider other parts. That essentially is the presentation on the statute of limitations problem. I'd like to talk for a few moments just on the notice itself. The statute provides that notice to the Bureau or Commission told the statute. Notice was given here, we believe, through the motion that was filed on 1-26-87, asking for payment of the bill of the North Community Mental Defender Act. That we believe provided notice. In addition to that, there was the doctor's letter with attachments, which went to the employer, so the employer knew. And I would like to suggest to the court that the employer, being the self-insured, is the first or initial processing agent. The self-insured may deny the claim. I believe the self-insured may be put on a notice of the claim. And I believe that even though the statute that is 184 doesn't specifically say so, when you can show that the self-insured had notice, it constitutes a tolling of the statute. And the self-insured in this case surely had notice because their letter of December 86 clearly rejected the bill.
This has put a great burden on it seems to me on the employer, and all you do is refer to in a piece of paper in WT Nord Community Mental Health Center with nothing else on it to indicate that.
Our problem sheet is that there's a letter from the employer rejecting the bill. That letter is December of 86. That letter is less than a year. I don't think I'm putting any burden on the employer. I think the employer recognized what this is about. I think the employer recognized it could decide not to pay the bill. I think it did, and it put it in writing. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffe. Mr. Murray.
Okay, please support counsel. My name is Edward Murray. I'm an attorney with the Cantwell Firm of the Actual Service Agency, and representative of the American
that in light of the language of C, which really it actually speaks to part of the body not specified pursuant to A1. Now that language is pretty exact. It sounds like it's an exception to the specification required.
When you read C in conjunction with paragraph A as well as the higher revised code 41.352, and the context in which C was added after the 67th Amendment, C is merely an acknowledgement that from that point forward, we are going to continually recognize residual conditions or flow-through conditions. They're not going to not be compensable. C also says that you must comply with the requirements of 84A and 52. So it's basically a reiteration of the compensability.
But if it says continuing jurisdiction, if one has one's claim allowed under A1 or under A, A1, then if it's continuing jurisdiction, isn't that the whole import of that of C that says continuing jurisdiction for parts of the body not specified under A1?
At the same time that language is added, that's what we could do also. That's specific language is added in section 52, specifically continuing jurisdiction upon proper notice of the body parts pursuant to age 4. So it's clear coming out of the sentence that specific notice of body parts, any new injury, would be required in order for the continuing jurisdiction to continue after that new injury. Again, I'd like to point out that this court, in both Lewis and Trimble decisions, recognizes the application of the two-year notice provisions to flow-through psychiatric conditions. In doing that, I think this court has recognized that the 1967 amendment made the problem the notice requirement. New injuries, whether or not they flow through additional conditions or the initial allowance, must be noticed within 2 years. That's not an onerous requirement, and certainly it's consistent with the whole policy of the statute of limitations for bringing claims. I think the proposed result here would ignore this fine term and would ask you to delete certain portions of the statute and look at the result that should prevail. One other thing I'd like to point out on the statute of limitations is the fact that we're not viewing this in a vacuum. The legislature, since implementing and even the terms of this, have been silent on this court's application of statute to situation. If they had wanted the notice provision to only apply to initial allowances of bodily injury, they would have said so. But they've twice reviewed this particular statute, A4, and not restricted the application to one test. At this point, I'd like to refocus on the merits of the 1987 vote, because I think that's very important here. Really, the only issue that's determined in this case. Item number 4 under that motion is the request for a payment and agreement. And that motion by itself, and it was by itself, was applied to their position. The trial court has made that determination a number of times, it was affirmed by the Court of Appeals twice. That there were no attachments to the 1987 motion filed with the Industrial Commission of Appeals. And I think relevant here is the court's decision in Moreover versus the Industrial Commission and the McKinney versus Hillside and Niagara County appellate case, which indicate that fair reference to the position are not enough. Well, here in that notice, we don't even have a fair reference to a medical order or other condition. What we have is a vague, ambiguous request for unidentified treatment or an unidentified condition. Or no real attached, no reports attached, no notes, no treatment plan attached. The treatment that's rendered at that facility could have been for the treatment of the condition for allergic rhinitis attached for a 1987 motion. What would you respond to that? What would the employer's response to that admission? The employer didn't recognize the compatibility. I don't think of any of the items that were requested in that
Well, Mr. Jaffe said it was rejected by the employer. Was there a specific rejection of item number 4, or is it of all the items that requested? How do we
excuse
that as saying you get noticed?
It was a rejection basically everything was being asked for. And it really should put the claimant on heightened notice that this claim is a contested matter. And again, using the diligence that the court has encouraged claimants to use, especially when they're well represented and on notice of contested matters, to make sure that the claim is filed in a proper manner. And the 1987 motion by itself, without more, is not filed in a proper manner. I think more diligence is required by the claimant in order to trigger the jurisdiction.
So walk us through the process. Certainly as work-related injuries, physical injuries, and later develop connected psychiatric problem. What's the problem?
Well, certainly in condition, as of January 23rd of 1986, this claimant was aware that she had a psychiatric problem. She has received a specific diagnosis as to what exactly that psychiatric problem was, and she was represented. And she certainly could have filed a motion requesting that specific diagnosis. I know that's not required, but she also certainly could have attached.
What is required, and that's what the state turns on.
What is required is something that puts the industrial commission and the bureau on notice that compensable condition is being requested. Whether or not that's notifying a specific diagnosis or attaching bills that identify treatment for a condition or a certain body part, that's what's required. Here, all we have is item number 4, buried within 6 other or 5 other requests in the motion that request unidentified treatment for an unidentified condition.
If a person starts a clinic that does a delivery, an orthopedic surgeon, and then maybe a contractor after that, or submitting those to an employer who's a self-insurer and paying for them, and then develop a psychiatric issue that affects that this is connected to your physical injury, and submit those
bills to the employer.
To the employer, and the employer pays them. Is there any need to do anything more?
No, in that instance, you may have situations where the debt can be told, or there can be a waiver situation, as the court has pointed out in the delivery.
In other words, an unsophisticated employee
gets the problem seeking the proper medical attention to make himself better and make service medicals and the employer.
In that case, there isn't any need to file anything more with the commission.
I still think you need to file with the commission within the 2 years in order to ultimately protect yourself. You want to do that. But to the extent you didn't, the court or the upper commission may find that the statute has been waived. And again, in those
five statements,
by the payment of the bill, and in those instances, that's up all the
disclosure. So, not payment of the bill, and put the payment on notice that they need to file something more.
They need to make sure that either they need to file something more, or whether what they file is sufficient under the statute.
But couldn't you?
I think they fall short of that.
Couldn't you say the rejection of the bill shows notice that the employer knew it was not connected with the original injury, and that was a different and separate injury that he was not allowing or not going along with. Couldn't you say that?
I think you probably could say that, but in either way,
isn't that notice?
It may be notice to the employer, but the requisite issue here is the statute requires notice to the industrial commission or the bureau. And I think that's very important here, because you have to have a neutral, objective, third-party arbiter of when the industrial commission's jurisdiction has been triggered. Otherwise, you're going to end up with 14 years of litigation between an employee and an employer as to what was received and what wasn't received, when the issue really is under the statute.
Does it make
what was filed with the industrial commission of the bureau in order to trigger that jurisdiction?
Does it make any difference that it's a self-insured?
It makes no difference under the statute. The statute requires that third-party arbiter receive the notice, and that third-party arbiter is the industrial commission or the bureau. Notice to the self-insured employer is not enough. I think this court has basically found that in the Mueller case. In that case, we found that the bills that were submitted by the employer to the industrial commission within the 2 years were sufficient. But taking that to the other way is the fact that had they not been submitted by the self-insured employer, 2 years run, the jurisdiction
Under your proposition of law number one, subsection D, you indicate that Kittle was legislatively overruled. In his dissent in Clemente, Judge Baird, sitting with us then, specifically discussed that and said it was not only not overruled, it codified what was done there, the two-year issue we're talking about. How can they be so different? He said Kittle, the General Assembly very specifically codified what Kittle said.
With all due respect, Your Honor,
he was just wrong.
That was a dissenting opinion, and I think it's just a misreading on behalf of Justice Baird of what paragraph C means. Paragraph C means that there's an acknowledgement that individuals will be compensable provided the adequate notice or adequate notice is given as to those newly developing injuries.
Doesn't that go directly then contrary to Dent also? To Dent? Does that proposition you've just stated negate sub silentio Dent? Because Dent very clearly said what we meant with regard to the flow through.
Well, in Dent, I think what you were dealing with was an injury to the same body part that had already been noted. So there's a difference there. If you've already satisfied the statute as to that body part, there's no need to satisfy the statute yet again by notifying. But the statute still exists as to those newly developing injuries that affect different parts of the body or are new injuries.
But it being a flow-through injury from a body part previously injured. Are you making a distinction between a flow-through injury to an already listed body part and versus a flow-through injury to a non-listed body part?
The statute requires that each and every injury to a different body part
yes.
be properly noted.
Yeah, but if it's flow-through and caused by the injury to a body part, I don't see any distinction whether it's more than 2 years later or within 10 months. The allegation here is that this injury flowed through from the original injury, isn't it?
That's correct. I'm not following your question.
Okay. I just think that's what Kittle was about, that's what Dent was about, and that's really what the General Assembly did in 67 when they finally said... Maybe that's wrong.
The General Assembly has had an opportunity since 1988 to look at this issue. They've not done anything with it to restrict the application.
One of the problems that it seems to me is that even in C, it still refers to body parts. It's part of the body, not specified for some provision A1 of sex, commission by the loss of current bodily functions. Bodily functions, usually mental conditions, are not bodily functions. I mean, they can be, I guess, but technically, usually it would be distinguished from bodily functions and mental functions. I guess that's why we're faced with having to fill in some gaps here, it seems to me.
But
that's
what you left. And I think in order to help you do that, psychiatric complaints fall within the definition of injury. The statute right. applies in all cases of injury. And the Paul versus Donnie case that relied on by Clemente found that the mind, the psyche, the nervous system are a part of the body system.
Is the mental condition, I've heard of condition, is it a condition or is it an injury? It means a condition or an injury. It is an injury. I think you're both in that. It's an injury.
Yes.
I guess that's some problem.
I think it's statutory to find such.
Yeah.
Your Honor, I see my time has
yes. yes.
expired. May I have a moment to?
Very briefly. You're way over time. You're taking over your time.
The one thing I'd like you to see is that there's a more reasonable approach here. And I think that approach is to follow Lewis versus Trimble. There's three policies that are at work that are spotless there. The first is the syllabus law that applies to 41.384 to flow-through psychiatric claims. The second is the policy that recognizes the importance of adhering to the written dictates of the statute. Therefore, you can't restrict notice on certain types of injury. You have to adhere to the fact that notice is to the industrial commission and to the bureau as that mutual third-party arbiter. exhibiting the record to the level of guilt, which, basically settling for funeral below, and they found on that factual issue that, that the 1987 motion by itself is not sufficient. And I'd ask you to affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jaffe, you saved 4 minutes of your time.
Specifically wrote in 84C
And 84C was a recognition that there is continuing jurisdiction under 152, that there may be allowances for conditions that have not been listed in 81, providing you're able to show in the end that it's a residual tumor result of. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffe. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.